Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Paula, a compulsive overeater from Montreal. Welcome, Paula.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for your service. Got all the people, my goodness. And I have Trishy and Fishy next to each other. I don't know how I'm going to look at you. Oh, do something. Okay. So my name is Paula. I'm a compulsive overeater. I just want to start with a little prayer. So God, please start, guide my thoughts and my actions and show me what you would have me be. How can I be of service to you and my fellows? Thy will, not mine, be done. Okay. My story is probably not like everybody else's, or maybe it is, I don't know. I've been around these rooms a lot of years, and I've been on this earth almost a very long time also. And I didn't have a lot of weight to lose ever, but I was born, I'm one of those people who was born without an instruction book. I didn't get an instruction book and I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to live. I lived in a total, total fantasy world, total, total fantasy world. I didn't know that when you went out on a date, you washed your hair. I didn't know stuff like that. This is just coming back to me these days. So I was a thin child. I was a really thin little child. And there's a story I thought my mother made up, but it wasn't. Gloria Vanderbilt said it also, I was so thin, if I ate an olive, you could see the olive. And I had an aunt who used to call me Polive, Olive Polive. So I would just eat. I ate a lot. I really, really ate a lot. And I was a non-discriminant eater. I would eat anything. It didn't have to be good. Just had to be food. I liked to eat. And somehow I didn't put on a lot of weight. I didn't put on a lot of weight at all. I was a sugar addict. I was very oral. I was always putting something in my mouth. I stuck my thumb until I was 17 years old. I smoked, I chewed a lot of gum. We won't go into my gum story. You're not going to hear it again, Chris. We'll have to have a private conversation. And it was always something. It was always stuffing something into my mouth. Always. I was always dieting too, because I gained a pound or I gained 2 pounds. My mother was dieting. She put us on the AIDS diet. Anybody ever eat a whole box of AIDS, you know, AYDS? They were like caramel candies. I mean, you know, all these little diet things we try. My mother was always on a diet. So I was always on a diet. I probably had a very good metabolism because I was always eating and I was always thin. I was always thin until it caught up with me when I was about 14, 15 years old. And I started really being uncomfortable with my weight, always felt uncomfortable with my looks. Curly hair wasn't what it is today. In those days, you pulled it and you straightened it and you did all kinds of things with it. Now we let it go free a little bit. That was the worst thing for me, having this curly hair, because a lot of people didn't have curly hair in those days. I don't know where it came from. Everybody's got curly hair today. I was miserable. I had a very unhappy childhood. I will not go into it. Just let me say that there was a lot of, there's a big blank in my life because it was really awful. I suffered a lot in my life. And I guess food was a good comfort too. I learned how to make me comfortable. You know, when I was feeling unhappy, I would stick my head into a bag of something. On it went. I married. I've married a couple of times. I always hold these men hostages. I always say this, I hold men hostage. And I had a couple of children, but I was in a really, really bad marriage, and I was miserable, and I was eating and eating and eating and eating and eating. And my weight really started to climb up, really started to climb up. And a friend of mine told me about OA. I thought OA was all about losing weight. I had never gone to any of the pay and raise because I really didn't have that much weight to lose. And I thought I would be turned away at the door. So I came into OA not to stop overeating. I had no clue about what I had, just wanted to lose weight. And also I tell this story and everybody knows this story. My friend of mine had been in OA. She lost a lot of weight, and her, and I had this thing for her cousin, and he was going to the meeting. So I said, I'm going to come. I came to the meeting for a man. I mean, who comes to OA for a man? Sorry, gentlemen. Anyway. So I came into OA, and I didn't have a clue what they were talking about, except they mentioned the word God, which was, oh, that was really enough to chase me out of there. But I stayed. I stayed because I had the biggest car and I had to drive all the ladies because they lived from one area. We had to go to another area of town. And so I stayed and I was stuck. I was stuck for a while. I didn't know that I was a compulsive overeater until I stopped eating compulsively. So I do my life in hindsight. I do everything. That's how I look at my life. Everything is in hindsight. I got abstinent when I was, I used to eat 2 kilos of sunflower seeds a day. And that was aside from all the sugar and the other stuff that I was putting into my body. And I got abstinent in October 1982. That came into the program in 1982. Some of you probably weren't even born then. I stayed abstinent for a few years, but I didn't get this program. I didn't get what they were talking about. I thought it was a nice place to come to meet a lot of nice people, do the fellowship. All we had was the big book and the AA 12 and 12 in those days. And there was somebody in OA who didn't like the AA 12 and 12, said he couldn't relate to it. So we put away, the big book. So we put away the big book. And I somehow managed to stay in OA for all those years. I did a fourth step. Nobody told me how to do it. I did a fourth step. I didn't realize that it was written in the book. And on and on and on and on went for the years. Until I left OA. I left OA in about the early 2000s. I came back in 2007. And I got abstinent again. But when I went out, when I left the program, I put on weight, and I really put on weight because you guys taught me how to eat. I listened to everybody's stories and, oh boy, I'm going to try this and I'm going to try that. And I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. And that's what happened to me. And I gained a lot of weight and I decided to come back to OA. So I did the same thing, stuck around, did all this stuff I was doing, sponsoring. I don't know how I sponsored people, but I was sponsoring people without, and we did do the book. I always loved the big book. I always loved it, but I was never taken through the big book with a covered sponsor. In 2019, I retired and I was home and I was eating my lunch and it was the first, and I used to have a snack in the afternoon when I was working. And this was the first time that I was having my lunch that the phone wasn't ringing. It was nice because I worked in the same place for 25 years, 24 years, boom, but I always ate at my desk. And so my little snack that I had for my little in between, I noticed that my hand wasn't coming out of the bag. It just kept going, you know, I kept stuffing and stuffing and stuffing and stuffing. And one of the person I sponsor called up and she said, I'm changing my abstinence date. And I thought, you know what? I got to do that too. I can't tell you how many times I changed my abstinence date. I can't tell you. But my new abstinence date is March the 6th, 2019. And what happened after that was that, I had a sponsor for years. I still adore her, but she's in a different time zone. She takes naps at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I can't figure it out anymore. So I started going to this telephone meeting and there were a bunch of lovely ladies in this meeting. And I was starting to learn about the big book, but really learning about the big book, which I thought I knew so well, cause I knew everything. And I was downtown and I was in a store and my higher power said to me, because I had a connection, why don't you ask this particular person to be your sponsor? And I thought, what are you, nuts? she's young, she's gorgeous, she's so, you know, whatever, she's here, but you can guess who she is. And I said, oh, and she's never going to say yes. So I called her and I asked her to be my sponsor because my higher power told me I had to. And she said, I'd be happy to be your guide. And she took me through the big book. Like I've never been taken through the big book before. And I became recovered. Finally, after all these years, I became recovered. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Where are my newcomers? The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got a really, really big one. I got a bunch of them. I'm obsessive. I got a bunch of big books. This is my one that I work from. And it says on page, in chapter 3, on page 30, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics, compulsive food readers. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people or presently maybe has to be smashed. That's before step one. That's way before step one. I have to concede. I have to fully concede that I'm a compulsive food reader. And as I said, I didn't know what this was all about. I thought it was a weight group. I didn't know what it was all about. When I conceded that I was a compulsive overeater, I really, really conceded that I was a compulsive overeater. It means that I have to put the food down. I've conceded nothing unless I put the food down. Nothing, nothing. There are people who work the program they work the steps in order to get abstinent. It says in the book, it says that over and over and over. It says it three times in the doctor's opinion. It says it all through the book. We have to put the food down first. I have to put the food down first. And so how do we do that? Well, I know for a lot of people have problems with sugar. A lot of people have problems with flour, artificial sweeteners, all kinds of things. It's recommended that you see a nutritionist or a dietitian and you get a food plan. There's a difference between abstinence and a food plan. Abstinence is staying away from my trigger foods, which can be anything really. And compulsive food behaviors. And so abstinence means it's something I can't eat, and food plan means something that I can't eat. I try to make that simple. That's what I can do. So the whole thing is to put the food down, whatever it is, identify it, find a sponsor and work with your sponsor, work with the nutritionist and find what triggers you, get abstinent, and then 2 days abstinent, or as quickly as you can, you start working the program. And there's this thing in the beginning of the book, it's called the doctor's opinion. And I heard somebody say that the depth at which I work the doctor's opinion is the depth at which I'm going to work the rest of the steps. And that's what it is. The doctor's opinion is this amazing chapter where this lovely little doctor who loved drunks in the 1930s, 20s and 30s, and depression, just worked in a hospital and helped try to help people. And he worked with 50,000 alcoholics because he worked with alcoholics. And many of them didn't come back, but the 10% of them came back. And I consider myself that 10%. It means that I am a distinct entity. That means that I can sit down with my sister and she can have whatever she wants to eat. And she'll look at it and she'll take two bites and that'll be it. And I will stop talking to my sister because I don't hear what she's saying anymore because I'm looking at what's on her plate. I want to eat. Like, you're not eating it fast enough, you know? And I'm going to keep eating and eating and eating because I don't know how to stop. I just don't know how to stop. And that's why I'm different. I'm different from my sister. I'm different from other people. I have an allergy of the body and obsession of the mind. And when I start eating certain things, I don't crave them. I just want to have them. I just want to satisfy this thing in my head. So I say, I'm just going to have one. And my body does not know one. Just does not know one. I'm not going to, well, I'm sure a lot of people have, I'll bring up potato chips. So, if I have a bag of potato chips, and people know that I'm going to eat a bag of potato chips or have some potato chips. I have to have two because I have to eat that whole bag and then eat the other half and give you back the other half. So you won't know that I've had that first bag. The other bag goes under my bed. Nobody knows that I've had that. Right. So it goes into my mouth. There's the 9-second thing. It takes a little bit longer, but before it's gone past my teeth, before it's gone past my teeth, I want another one, and I want another one. And that mental obsession kicks in, and it tells me that I have to have more, and I have to have more, and I have to have more. And I don't know how to stop. I don't know how to stop. But my also, I have this mental twist that tells me this time I'm only going to have one. I live with a man who has 6 potato chips. What is that? What is that? I don't know how he does that and eats them slowly. What is that? Okay, I'll stop with the potato chip. But that's what it is. That's I think a lot of people can relate to that, that we, there's certain things. I mean, I can binge on a lot of stuff. I can binge on a lot of sweets. I can binge on anything. I gave up sweets a long time ago because I have hypoglycemia, and it got pretty dangerous, pretty dangerous. But there were still times when I thought, maybe if I just put the sugar in, just a little bit of sugar, maybe it's not going to affect me, right? So that's because I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. That's what it tells me. It tells me over and over again that you can do this, that you don't have a disease, that you don't have one. So the program tells us very clearly that we have to put the food down, the big book tells us. And then what else do we have to find? It's about finding a power greater than myself, which is going to solve my problem. They talk about God in this book. They talk about, and it scares people, and it scared me. Don't run away, newcomers. Gets easier, or it gets harder, then it gets easier. And I heard somebody say, I love this. Easiest way to find a higher power is said to define a higher power. It's bigger than my food problem, and it loves me. No, it likes me. Excuse me, it likes me. A lot of people love me. A lot of people don't like me. So it likes me. It likes me. And I thought, isn't that a nice little concept? It's bigger than me, because I have to make myself a lesser power. I have to make a lesser power so I can find what my higher power is going to give to me. And I found a higher power pretty quickly. But I have to say that my higher power swooped in many, many times when I wasn't even connected with my higher power. So that's been an incredible thing. I could sit at a table with 4 people. There are always 3 people and me. This is a story of me, that it's always about self, self, self. It's me. Everybody can be having a conversation and I'm somewhere else. When my mother died a couple of years ago, actually it's 4 years now, and people were coming to visit us in our house. And my sister was talking about some stories about my mother. And she did these incredible things. And where was I? Why didn't I know this about my mother? Where was I? So I was just filled with myself, self, 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 self. That's what it was. And in this book, it tells us, if you go to page 62 and 63, 60 to 63, talks all about self. Talks all about self. It talks about how I am. I'm filled with self-condemnation. I'm filled with lack of self-esteem. I'm filled with self, 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 all about self. And I always used to say that I had no self-esteem, and I didn't realize that self was in the word self-esteem. I never realized that. It took a little bit of time for me to understand that. It says here in this book that, I try to live on self-propulsion. I try to live, I'm so self-pitying. I'm so self-seeking. I'm so self-searching. I never thought that it was anything about me. I never thought that there was, I thought that I was so kind. I thought I was so helpful. And why is everybody picking on me? Why are all these things happening to me? I didn't understand it. I just didn't get it. I just didn't get it. And I remember going through this chapter with my sponsor, going through this things, and I reread it and we went through everything, and I called her back, and this is after years, and I said to her, they're talking about me. Like, I didn't get it after, in the program years and years, I didn't get that they were talking about me. There was this connection, I guess, that happened to me when I retired. I finally got out of, my head started to work properly, and I was able to start working this program properly. So I'm all over the map, but that's okay. So my problem is my thinking. My problem is in my mind. And I will lie to you over and over and over and over again about anything, about my food, about my life, about what I do, about my talents. I will lie to you. I will lie to you. And I believe that lie. I believe that lie because I'm delusional. Doesn't talk about being in denial here. Talks about being delusional. And I heard a very nice somebody explain about delusion and denial. I steal your wallet. And some you come to me and say, did you find my wallet? And if I'm in denial, I'll say, I don't have your wallet. But I know I have your wallet. But if I'm delusional, I'll say, no, I don't have your wallet. And I believe that I don't have your wallet. That's for me. And that was told by a very good AA speaker, a lovely AA speaker who tells that story. So that's where I was. I was delusional all the time. Let's see. So there is no spiritual part of the program. It's a spiritual program. It's a spiritual program. And this is what scared me. This is what scares a lot of people. Don't run away, newcomers. This is what you get. I found a higher power in the program, but I never did a lot of the things in the big book that the big book told me to do. Up until recently. I remember when I saw my sponsor, we worked it over the phone. And I saw her and I saw her at a retreat and I was talking about step 10. She says, why aren't you sending your step 10s to me? And I said, oh, I'm supposed to do them? Like, I'm not really clear on the concept sometimes. Just like step 11, I'm not really clear on the concept. And I'll tell you how I started doing step 10s and step 11, working step 11 and 10, 11 and 12 when I started sponsoring. That's when things started to change for me. When I started working the book and explaining the book to the others, I really, really believe that the more to teach, whatever, I don't want to use the word teach, but the more I bring somebody through the book, the more I learn the book. And that's what it is. And because it's repetition, you do it over and over and over again. You know, I was terrified to sponsor. And we hear people on the line say, you know, you'd be terrified not to sponsor. And a lot of people won't. I'm not in the results business. I don't have a lot of people. I took a lot of people through the steps. I don't know where they are. I don't know what they've done. I'm not in the results business. I just have to carry the message. And I used to doubt myself, but I carry the message. I say what I have to say. I do what I have to do. I take people through the book. Line by line by line, word by word by word. And we can do it quickly because I speak so quickly. People ask me to slow down. I will try. but that's what I do. And my life really opened up when I started doing 10, 11, and 12. Well, 12 I always did, but 10 and 11, my life really, really opened up. I have a God squad. I do my 10 steps with some wonderful people. What a difference. What a difference that is. And for the newcomer, you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but that's okay. You will learn. We have defects. I didn't think I had any character defects. I just thought I was a character defect. I just thought I was totally, totally, totally defective. That's my lack of self-esteem. I thought that there was nothing I could do. Nothing I could do. Only thing I could do well was breastfeed my kids. Nobody else could do that for me. I could do that. So I did that. I could have kept having more kids and they would have been fine, you know, but they grow up. You can't keep doing it forever. thank God. So I wanted to find little pieces in the book that I like and talk about that. But of course, I decided today that I would just let God talk through me. So let God do the work and I'll just, you know, this can be the, so I didn't prepare anything. There's so many incredible lines in this book and there's so many incredible promises in this book. And practically you can find a promise in practically every single paragraph of the book, really every single paragraph of the book. The program works if I do the work. That's the thing. When I don't do the work, it doesn't work. I have to do the work. I have to do the work. I have to I have to sponsor. I have to do my 10, 11, and 12. And I have to show up. I have to show up. I have to be there. And I have to get a relationship with my higher power. There are four impediments to God. A resentment you will not let go of. A secret you will not tell. A harmful thrill you will not stop. And a restitution you will not make. And I know for me, I stopped at when I was working the program in the beginning, whichever way I was doing it with the other books and stuff like that, I stopped at four. I did five. I stopped at five. I had no problem with four and five. I can tell you anything. I have no problem with that. We lose a lot of people at eight and nine, steps eight and nine. That's where we lose a lot of people. That's having to make amends, having to make restitution. You know, if I want to get closer to my higher power, if I want to have a life that I never dreamed of having, if I want to grow, then I got to get rid of this junk. I got to get rid of this junk that I've been carrying around for so long. I get this bag, it's full and it's full and it explodes. It explodes and it goes all over the place. It goes all over the place. Because I have to clean up my act. I have to clean up. And I didn't know I had anything to clean up because I had such lack of self-esteem that I just didn't think there was anything there. There was just a shell, you know. I have to, every day I have to uncover, I have to discover and I have to discard. And I also have to, I have a mandate that I have to trust God, clean house and help others. That's what I have to do. I have to get out of myself. I have to show up and be and accept to be divinely inconvenienced on a daily basis. I have to do that. I have to show up. And if I don't feel like answering the phone, you know, I'm the one who suffers. If I don't feel like making outreach calls, I think everybody has a problem with the 500-pound phone, the receiver. I think most people have it. Most people don't like making phone calls because we're going to bother you. We're going to disturb somebody. Got to make those calls. Got to make those calls. And when I pick up that phone and I'm there for somebody, I get out of me. I get out of me and I can get out of me for a couple of minutes. And that's really good because when I help others, that's when my life really works because that's what my higher power wants me to be, wants me to do. If I don't do my step 11 and my prayer and meditation, I had this wonderful example. A couple of weeks ago, I found this new place because in my house where I like to do my prayer and meditation, I've been doing two-way prayer and I've just started doing it. And I need a silent place. I need a really quiet place. And I have somebody here I want to thank very much for starting me on the two-way prayer. And I have this place, right? And my partner gets up late. So a couple of weeks ago, I was sitting in this place. It wasn't in the room. I was sitting in this place and he came out of the room and he got in my way. I couldn't do my prayer. I couldn't do my meditation. Couldn't do my two-way prayer. Couldn't do anything.
That's 5 minutes, Paula.
Oh, good. Okay, good. I'm going to stop soon. And anyway, so what happened then 2 seconds later, I went into the cupboard to get a hanger. Have you ever tried to get a hanger when the hangers are all like this? They're all like this and they're all messed up. And I couldn't get the hanger out. And I thought, that's what happens to me when I don't do my prayer and meditation, because it's like a hanger, because you want the blue hanger and you have 15 other hangers that are attached to it and you try to get it out and they're all over the place. You start screaming and yelling. I don't know if anybody can relate to this, but I thought this would be a perfect example. When I don't do my prayer and meditation, that's what happens to me. That's what happens to my day. So what can I say to the newcomer? I hope I haven't scared you. The program gave me a life. Saved my life and gave me a life. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I do things that I could never do. I've become very courageous. I just did something yesterday in front of a whole bunch of people that I would never have done. and I did it in a different language. and I could never have done that. Even when I was not working the program so years ago, I had the courage to go back to school. I got another degree. I did things that, you know, even so all the years that I was here and I wasn't working the program through the book, I was still doing something. I was still doing something. And it's a wonderful thing. It changed my life. And having a relationship with a higher power means that I don't have to be alone anymore. I don't have to be alone. I love to isolate. That's part of my disease. I love to isolate. I love being alone. I love to read. I love to listen to my own music. But I don't have to be alone. I know how to pause. I know how to, before I open up this big trap, I know how to say things. Working on it a lot with the poor man I live with, but it's good for 10 steps and stuff like that. So I'm working on that. Anyway, so I hope that I didn't scare the newcomers. This is a beautiful program, and it's simple, but it's not easy. A price has to be paid. That's right out of the big book. And we just have to keep going. Keep going every day. Be grateful every day that you wake up and you can put your 2 feet on the floor and have a relationship with a very, very loving higher power. And all these amazing friends that you get. Look at this screen. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for asking me to share. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Paula. I'm just